Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. Hour 2, Wednesday. It's the Herd. Live in Los Angeles, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. Happy Veterans Day, those who serve and have served. This company talks a lot about that here. It's not just a day for us. It's something that's part of our fabric. It's great to have you in. Veterans Day, we send our Sunday crews all over the country. A little tougher this year. They were down at Miramar, the base down near San Diego.
Yes.
It's amazing. When you drive from, for those listening, when you drive... from Los Angeles down to San Diego, you go by Miramar and Camp Pendleton. I was in Camp Pendleton about 2 years ago. And these are like huge communities, like 25,000 people, hospitals, you know, living quarters. It's really amazing. Grocery stores everywhere. And
I used to go to the base with my grandpa a lot. He lived in Detroit. He was retired, obviously, at the time. He served for the Army for 30 years. But he would wake up every morning and go work out at the base. So we go to the base with them and like play basketball.
Now what base was it?
I can't remember the name of the base, but it was near Detroit.
In college, I roomed with a kid named Jimmy from Gainesville, and Jimmy was in the military, and we were always jealous of Jimmy. Jimmy would go to the local base in Spokane and come back for $30 with $700 of groceries. He had some card. And we're like, how come Jimmy eats better than all of us in college? And he had a military family, and Jimmy was nice enough to share. But it's been part of my life. My dad served. Just thanks for joining us today and for all the veterans out there.
Yes.
Part of this great country. So no is a very powerful word. And the two greatest no's in the history of sports are Steve Kerr saying no to the Knicks. He went to the Warriors and creates a dynasty. He said no. They offered no. And the second greatest no is Bill Belichick being offered the Jets job and saying no. Everybody thought he had it and going to the Patriots. And Belichick talked on WEEI Radio in Boston yesterday. It's the greatest achievement of his career, saying no.
One of the not only most defining, but you know, one of the great moments of my career. And that combined with Robert giving me the opportunity to come here, I mean, I couldn't have asked for anything more. So that wasn't a good situation for me, and I didn't want to be part of it, so I wasn't.
Two greatest no's ever, Belichick, Steve Kerr. Runner-ups, Coach K said no to the Lakers after they traded Shaq, probably a smart move. Urban Meyer chose Florida over Notre Dame. I think that was a smart move. Those are runner-ups in the no category. But it does go to show how valuable ownership is. No one man, no one woman can overcome utter chaos or dysfunction. And Pat Riley's won everywhere. The only place he hasn't won titles is New York with the Knicks. He only got to one finals, as great as he is. There's just too much dysfunction with the Knicks historically, especially in the last 30 years, three decades, right? So if I had, John Wooden, the basketball coach at UCLA, the pyramid of success in sports and in the NFL specifically, the pyramid of success would look like this. The foundation and the most important part of it is ownership. And we don't think about that. I've always said owner, GM, coach, quarterback. Ownership's the most important. Getting a quarterback is number two. Coach is third. Belichick's won 43% of his games without Brady. And a GM, though valuable, the Patriots had a 20-year dynasty and didn't really have an all-powerful general manager. Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson winning games, nothing against John Snyder. But, I mean, the draft is, let's be honest with you, it's a little bit of a crapshoot. I mean, the best drafters of all time hit on like 60% of their players. So, and that to me, that's kind of what it looks like. And if you think I'm wrong on that, think about this. Here's the teams that currently lead their division in the NFL. Philadelphia, good owner. Kansas City, good owner. Pittsburgh, good owner. Buffalo, new but good owners. New Orleans, the Benson family, above average owners. Seattle, Green Bay, not an owner. Community owns it. Seattle, Paul Allen was terrific, wealthy, non-meddling. He's passed it on to his sister. We don't know. But again, Pete and John run it. So you've got good, excellent stewardship. And then there's Tennessee, which I would not call great ownership, mostly because I wasn't a huge fan of Bud Adams. His daughter took it over. I'll let it play out. But what's interesting, last place teams in the NFL right now, Jets, Jags, Bengals, Detroit are four of them. Those are not well owned. So it's some of those Some of those teams have quarterbacks and coaches. The pyramid and the success in the NFL, owner's the most important thing. It is really hard. Whether you're an employee in our business or in any business, you just can't overcome dysfunction. Doesn't matter how talented you are. A guy that is very functional, wrong quite often, but nonetheless very functional, is Joel Klatt, the voice of college football for Fox Sports. He's joining us live right now. Here he is, Joel Klatt. The only guy with the courage to join us on set.
Yes, sir. How are we doing?
Well, we're doing
good. I overcome dysfunction every Wednesday.
You know what? Here's the thing. That doesn't bother me.
Good, good, good. Thick skin. Well done.
So you and I both said last week, Brian Kelly doesn't get the credit he deserves.
Yeah.
How much was that and how much was, well, Clemson was missing a bunch of good players?
Well, probably a little bit of both, right? So Notre Dame had an unbelievably sound game plan, and they executed it well. And also, Clemson didn't have probably their three best or three of their top four best defensive front seven players.
That's right.
So, top quarterback in college football, out. They've got a great running back. What should you do? Make the quarterback the replacement, even if he's talented, right? So Uiagalelei comes out there, and he's like, everyone says, he was great. Yes, he was great. Guess who didn't beat Notre Dame? Travis Etienne. Mm-hmm. He's the known commodity. That's a great game plan. Bottle up Etienne, make the young players make plays. And while they did, great, at least you didn't have Etienne go for 200 yards. Right. And you're like, what? Why would you let him beat you? So again, that was a sound game plan. You got three of the top four, maybe the three best defensive front seven players for Clemson out of the game. What should you do? Run the ball. What did they do? Incredibly well. They ran the ball late in the game. I thought it was easier for Ian Book to throw late in the game because that pass rush had been slowed down by the run game. So I thought that the game plan for Notre Dame was excellent, and they executed it beautifully. And at the same time, they were able to do that because of the guys that weren't on the field for Clemson.
Okay, I'm going to defend Jim Harbaugh again. Now, here's my thing.
I don't know. I'm running out of that steam.
Well, maybe I'm just more loyal as a friend. Okay, Jim's quirky. I get it. But here's what makes me want to defend him. We know James Franklin's a really good coach. He's 0-3. If you start looking at some of the stuff that's happening in college football, yeah, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, still great. Okay? There's a lot of these teams that are just unraveling with COVID and the schedule, and maybe they don't have the talent. They don't have the reserves. They don't have the depth.
The reserves. I'm going to use that.
So my point is, when James Franklin, and the Big Ten's been kind of a start-stop mess a little bit with COVID, unlike the SEC, which says, we're bulldozing through it.
Not this week. I hear your premise.
I mean, how is James Franklin 0-3 and Harbaugh? It's like, now can James
Both of them have been two of the most disappointing teams in college football this season.
Could it be just a COVID Big Ten thing?
I don't know. And the reason is because it's not like we're seeing – here's the thing that I'm most concerned about from a Michigan perspective. So if you look at week one against Minnesota and a team that I overvalued, Minnesota, which is why I said, wow, Michigan looks really good after that week one win. They ran the football effectively. I thought that their pass rush was really good. I got the sense that like their defense was going to be very good once again. And the problem is that their defense has gone back and reverted into what we saw at the end of last year, which was a team that can't get off the field on third down and gave up way too many big plays in the passing game. For their last five games, they've given up over 300 yards. And what a John Brown's staples as a defensive coordinator was the fact that they were a great pass defense, one of the top pass defenses in all of college football. They don't have the requisite corners to play the aggressive style of man coverage that he likes to play. It's a bracket style of coverage that he really is his go-to, where they bracket interior players and play one-on-one on the outside, and they can't do that this year because they're getting beat at the corner position. They also are not running the football. This has been a staple of Jim Harbaugh, at least his effective teams, was the ability to run the football. Indiana, folks, this is not a defensive powerhouse. Indiana held Michigan to 13 carries for 12 yards. 12 yards, right? Like, you're not going to win. So I can't just say, like, yeah, but COVID, right? Like, COVID didn't prevent Michigan from running for 12 yards. Like, a really poor, one, game plan, two, execution up front, three, lack of commitment to the running game helps you run for 12 yards. Those are things that, at this point now, are becoming consistent with the program. If they continue to play like this, then they're going to have one of the most disappointing seasons that they've had in recent vintage at Michigan. And by the way, Penn State's in that disappointing class. You can't be 0-3 after being top 10 coming into the season. Georgia, you're disappointing too. Kirby Smart, you say you got a great defense and that's going to take you to the playoff. And yet, in the best two games or the toughest two games of the season against Alabama and Florida, your defense was completely obliterated.
Kirby Smart can recruit. To this point, I don't know if he's a great coach. He's a great recruiter.
He's a very,
very
good recruiter.
There's a lot of great recruiters out there. A lot of guys. Ed Orgeron's a great recruiter. I don't think he's a great coach.
If you're going to listen, you brought this up with Harbaugh in Michigan. There are some flaws right now with Michigan that we haven't seen in previous years. In previous years, they go into games that they should win, and they won soundly. And then you'd get to the games where it's like, okay, let's see what they are against the Notre Dames of the world or Ohio States of the world, and then that's where they would fall short. And you could kind of say, well, yeah, they don't have the talent that those other programs have. Listen, they have plenty of talent to beat Michigan State and Indiana and didn't do either. And in both games, they struggled in areas where they shouldn't. So there's some issues with Michigan right now, and I think that they're deeper than just COVID.
Okay, so it's really interesting that you were a quarterback at Colorado of some acclaim. I was a very effective bubble screen quarterback at Acosta High School.
Ooh,
don't have any
screens.
Footage, but I was very way ahead of my. I was the Spurrier. I just bubble screens.
Oh, that's a high school
Heisman. I would want it. Okay, so quarterbacks are better coming out of college and more ready to play. That's indisputable.
Okay.
And what's happening now is, you know, we always about a year out, 2 years out, are like, yeah, those two guys, Trevor, Justin Fields, then there's a guy from North Dakota. And all of a sudden, we see a Zach Wilson. And
BYU.
You're like, oh, boy. And then we see this kid, Mac Jones, at Alabama.
Yes.
Who's got a Joe Burrow feel to him. Like, he's a guy.
Oh, that's interesting. Who brought up that comparison earlier this year? I think it was me. That's interesting. But go ahead.
So now I look at Mac Jones, and all these people who I listen to are texting me, and I ask questions. They're like, no, he's going to be a first-round quarterback.
Why didn't you just listen to me four weeks ago? I don't understand this. Now my contacts are telling me.
Who do you sound like right now?
I'm just telling you.
Ann. She says that all day, my wife. You don't listen to me. And I'm like, well, there's some skepticism due.
And you seem like an incredibly smart lady. And you're right. Colin should listen to you more.
So Mac Jones, you watch him. And I was like, okay, it's Alabama. He doesn't get touched. NFL receivers. But my peeps are like, no, he's pretty good.
Well, when you watch him, you have to evaluate his presence in the pocket, which I think Max has been very good. Does he deliver the ball on time and on target? Yes. Does he understand the different types of throws necessary to be an effective quarterback? And I think that that's the case. You see that throw on your screen right there. Beautiful touch pass. You see him drive the football into intermediate zones. You see him use the ability to use a strong arm outside the numbers at times. And then, yes, of course, he's got great players on the outside that he throws to. He really does. And he puts the ball in places where those playmakers can have success. So he's having a phenomenal year. Zach Wilson at BYU is having a phenomenal year.
He's a fun player. I saw him a couple years ago. He's a good player. He's fun.
He's a very good player. It remains to be see that ball? See how he drove it all the way outside
the numbers?
That's a nice throw. It's a beautiful throw. Max playing incredibly well. I think that we have legitimately five, maybe six, first-round style quarterbacks right now, top 50 quarterbacks that are starting to work themselves into that mold. Now, our top two are pretty clearly our top two.
Yeah.
I think Trey Lance is right there, but then you're going to get your Mac Jones of the world, your Zach Wilsons, and watch out for Kyle Trask at Florida as well. Trask is having an unreal season.
I know, he is. I think Dan Mullen's a really good coach.
He is a very good coach.
Okay. So, you know, it's interesting about all this stuff. As you know, as the season kind of unfolds, you have the USC game this weekend.
Yes, Arizona.
Which is the Arizona State game. I felt so bad for Herm Edwards. They completely out-schemed him and outplayed him, and they lost. It happens in football. So I just think USC won their toughest game. USC runs the table. They do not look like on the offensive and defensive lines they can compete with the big boys, including Notre Dame. They got a huge break. Bama, Notre Dame knocked off their schedule. If USC runs the table, goes 7-0, and their big win is Arizona State, but they're undefeated, could you put them in the playoff?
Well, we haven't seen an undefeated Power 5 team be kept out of the playoff.
Yeah, but we haven't had COVID, so it was seven games.
I totally get that, but we don't know how many games the other teams are going to get in either. I mean, look at what's happening in the SEC. Listen, so I'll start with that premise. I think that if you get an undefeated Pac-12 champion, I believe that they'll go. All right. Remember now, this the college football playoff is owned by the conferences. So they're not going to sit there and say, like, well, we're going to devalue one of our main stakeholders to the point where you can go undefeated in that conference and not go to the playoff.
Oregon, by the way, does have some really nice NFL players.
They do, but they're replacing their entire offensive line and their quarterback. So at this point, I would give USC the edge in the Pac-12.
All right.
In particular, after last week in their toughest game, they get outplayed and still win. I think that that's a good omen for USC. Here's my question, though. If you're the college football playoff right now, and I'm speaking to the conferences, by the way, as well, because you guys own the college football playoff, give yourselves a break and some flexibility. Why are we running towards this hard date of December 20th? I don't understand it whatsoever. Like, have some flexibility in what's going on. Every other sport in America has allowed a massive amount of flexibility and adjustment to their schedules in order to play requisite number of games, give the players opportunities, have a champion that we can all look at and say, you know what, that is a true champion. And they've done that because they've been flexible and they've allowed for adjustment within the schedule. There's no reason whatsoever why the college football playoff, owned by the conferences, should say we're going to have a firm date and you have to be done with your conference by December 20th. Because we're going to put the rankings out, and then we have to play the semifinals on New Year's Day, and then we have to play the champion. That can all be adjusted, and I think it should be adjusted, and really for two or three reasons. One, the first and foremost is I think it would increase the ability of the playoff to actually get the four best teams into the playoff. Okay, because if we stretch the season out, the cream always rises to the top. So I think that we can allow for more games if we just postpone the selection Sunday of December 20th. The other part of this is that we need to allow the opportunity for these kids to actually play the contest, which they're opting in to play. Right, all these kids playing college football, these young men have opted into the season at this point. So give them the requisite opportunities to help increase their stock for the next level. Think of the last three number one draft picks that we've seen in the last 3 years. They were middling NFL draft prospects at the beginning of the season and then all of a sudden made themselves into the top pick in the draft. Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and then Joe Burrow. That happens all throughout college football. So let's allow these young men the opportunity to play the games that are at least on the schedule rather than just canceling them. I think that we should be looking towards some flexibility with the college football playoff. And by the way, adjusting for more teams would have been a no-brainer, but again, the rigidness of college football, the biggest problem with college football is all these conferences and stakeholders operate in silos and they only make decisions based on their own best interest rather than the best interest for the sport. Can we please get in a room and make decisions for the best interest of the sport for once? For goodness sake, get out there and do the right thing.
Okay, I'm going to ask tough questions and I want real answers. You're the AD of Michigan today.
Okay.
Do you bring back Harbaugh?
Well, I don't have to make that decision because he's under contract for one more year. Basically, the ball is in Harbaugh's court. He can push for an extension, which I'm probably not going to give him. And at that point, you're basically saying the writing's on the wall. I mean, I wouldn't give Jim an extension at this point, even though his contract is the shortest contract in all of college football. It's up at the end of next season. Every other major college football coach has a contract that exceeds the length of Jim Harbaugh's.
But if you don't give him an extension, it'll upset Harbaugh, who can be very temperamental, and he'll call his agent. He'll be gone.
Well, first of all, he doesn't have an agent. He negotiates his own deals. They were negotiating in February right before COVID, and to Jim's credit, he pulled the negotiation off the table, not because he wanted more, but because he thought it was the wrong time.
He negotiates his own deal?
Do you expect Jim to do anything else?
Okay, here's my second question. Notre Dame's topped out. That Clemson win's as good as it's going to get. You're not going to beat him a second time. Should Brian Kelly go to the NFL if given a chance?
Well, I mean, let him bask in the glory. They haven't even played another game.
It's Wednesday.
They're
over glory.
They're barely clearing off the field right now. I think they're still dancing around on the field, and you want Brian Kelly to go to the NFL?
Wednesday, done celebrating. Gets an NFL offer. Go or stay at Notre Dame?
I would stay at Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame's a fantastic job. And I think, by the way, Brian's done an unbelievable job at Notre Dame.
Oh, we love him. No, the rest of the people are knuckleheads. I think he's great. But I'm just telling you, NFL.
I'm a college football homer. I think all of these guys would be better suited to stay in college football. You can be there forever. You go to the NFL, you start your clock, you're going to be done in 3 years. Great. Go take the – what job do you want them to take? There's a better question.
Okay, just do it right now.
You just said NFL. Which job?
Okay, Goulet, Throw me the standings.
You want him to go work for one of those quote-unquote bad owners that you were just talking about before you brought me on?
Okay. No, Dallas fires Mike McCarthy. I take it
you
in a heartbeat.
You want anybody to take the Dallas job because they've had so much success in the last 100 years.
Okay, a Chargers Justin Herbert. I'd take that job in 1 second.
I don't know if I would. Anthony Lynn has done a pretty good job there.
That's not losing 14-point leads four weeks in a row.
And that's a good ownership group? Couldn't even get fans in the stands in San Diego. Now you got to be the second-tier team in L.A.?
Atlanta, Matt Ryan, decent roster offensively.
I wouldn't
Good
take
owner,
that.
Arthur Blank.
You're going to be gone in 3 years, so Matt Ryan retires and then you're gone. I mean, I'm just saying that the cyclical nature of the NFL, you're not going to have a long tenure. Brian Kelly can be at Notre Dame for the next 10 years, and it's not like you're going to get paid more in the NFL. You can make the same amount of money, and if you like the opportunity to –
South Bend is small. How many times can you say to your wife, honey, you want to go to Applebee's for dinner?
Gosh, you're such a...
I just say stuff to drive you nuts.
I will tell you, though, if if you want any sort of long... Like, you can build a true legacy in college football. You can leave a legacy. You can have 10, 15 years of players that you're affecting in a positive manner
where they can
be better men and better fathers, and they can come back and they can bring their children. And at some point, they're going to build a statue of you. And guess what? The money is the same. You're going to make $5 to $6 million a year for the next 10 years.
That's the best argument you've made today.
$60 million? You want them to just be like, oh, let me walk away for $60 million because I'm going to get guaranteed 15 in Atlanta so that when Matt Ryan retires, I'm going to get fired?
Oh, that's a good point.
It's an excellent point. Good. Right. Good doesn't do it justice.
All right. Anybody in your family served, by the
way? Yes, my father was a first lieutenant in the Marine Corps and fought in Vietnam. I thank him every single year. And all of you out there who have served, thank you from the bottom of my heart, all of our hearts, for what you did, what you sacrificed, the selflessness to serve this great republic. It is the most free, the most just country in the history of the world, and it is so because of what you did. Thank you so much.
You were almost likable this week. You have to work on your game. I want the old clap back. Good seeing you, buddy.
You too.
All right. By the way, the draft order in the NFL, why the Cowboys actually, this is perfect. They're being given an opportunity of a lifetime. Will Jerry take it? That's coming up.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
In honor of Veterans Day, Fox Sports proudly salutes those who serve our country. That's why Fox Sports and Good Sports are helping Blue Star families to empower military families and restore play for their kids through donations of brand new sports equipment. Learn how you can help by visiting BlueStarFam.org.
I don't even know what I would have done as a kid without sports. I had a basketball hoop in our driveway. I don't know. And it also doubled as a wiffle ball field. I had this perfect fence as a kid. So we would do in a basketball hoop. And the basketball hoop would become home plate during the baseball season. And I don't know what I would have done without. I love when people give to little leagues and kids sports. And especially with COVID, kids are trapped at home. They're not going to school.
I grew up on a hill like this. But somehow we still managed to play everything. It was just like a lot of running downhill.
Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
We actually built a basketball court in our yard on that hill. Like, me and my younger brother and sister just kind of dug out. I was a big tomboy growing up.
You were a college athlete.
We dug out like part of the hill and then put up, we had like these bricks under the back of the house. So we built like a little fence to try and keep like the rebounds from the ball rolling down the hill. It didn't really work, but like had to like bounce the ball on one piece of cement and then kind of like carry it over to the other. But we made it work. So Chris Paul had a great season with the Thunder last year and it caught the notice of many teams. According to reports, the Phoenix Suns are one of the many suitors in line for Paul. Paul is under contract for 2 more seasons and is set to earn $41 million next season and $44 million the year after that. He averaged 17.6 points, 5 rebounds, 6.7 assists, shot 48.9% field goal percentage, and 36.5 from 3 this year. The Suns were 34-39 last season, but they did go 8-0 in the bubble. They were one of the big stories in the bubble for the finish of the NBA season.
He was very good with a bunch of young kids in OKC, and he'd probably be very good with a bunch of young kids in Phoenix. He's a winning player. He plays basketball the way you should as a point guard.
He is. To me, this only works if it works with Devin Booker.
Right.
Like, if Devin Booker is okay with this and thinks this is a good move, then that's the way you go. But he's the star of that team, and the two of them would have to make it work. Like, that's what it would come down to.
But they do need another piece, because Booker's obviously great. But
they absolutely need another piece. But it is a piece that's going to have to be a complement to Devin Booker. He's a star in the future of the franchise.
There's some old school guy. You know, it's so funny. We're all in this three ball thing. But if you go look, Anthony Davis isn't a big three ball guy. Chris Paul's not. And he was OKC was the shock of the year. There's a little old school coming back where you don't have to be just a three ball shooter. And Chris Paul's one of those old school guys. He plays a little dirty. He's very good defensively. He shoots a mid range and he yells at people. That's very 1988 NBA basketball.
I thought they were an incredible story this season.
Oh, they were unbelievable. I think I saw a stat the last month before they went to the bubble. Oklahoma City had the second best record in the league.
We thought they were tanking.
Yeah, exactly. They had the second best record, and that's in the West, by the way. They weren't getting cheap W's.
Yeah, they did an incredible season, so we'll see what happens there. So there was some speculation entering the season whether Drew Brees would return to the NFL, and although he's still under contract for next season, Brees said on the Rich Eisen show that he isn't thinking beyond 2020 at this point.
I'm in the moment. I mean, I really am, and I can say that that's really the way it's been the last couple of years. I mean, honestly, I haven't taken any year for granted. Since 2017, for that matter, I've looked at each year like this could be my last. And so I'm going to treat it as such.
That's a healthy way to live.
It is. It kind of feels like this is the last.
Yes. And by the way, Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston, athletically, big upgrade. I want to see. We were talking about this in the hallway the other day. When you combine Bruce Arians' go-for-it mentality with Jameis' go-for-it play, it's a mess. But if you gave Jameis Winston, who throws a beautiful football and is very productive, if you gave him a more efficient coach, a little more demanding on the efficiency, does Jameis go from 30 touchdowns to 30 picks to maybe 27 touchdowns and 15 picks? And if that's yes, then you can win a division with that. Because Breeze is out, Brady's old, Matt Ryan's past his prime, Teddy Bridgewater's not the future. I would like to see 1 year of Jameis, we know he's talented, with a coach that's not risk it biscuit guy. Just one, because I think he fed into Jameis's propensity to kind of, you know, be a little loose.
I mean, Jameis was, his last season in Tampa Bay was ridiculous. I mean, the amount of turnovers was ridiculous. There's no other way to put it.
Like, but if you took off 10 picks, they're a playoff team.
Yeah, you'd have to start with 10 picks.
Yeah. No, I mean, even if he went 33 touchdowns, 19 to 20 picks, you're like, well, they would have won the last two games. So it's like, I've said before, I don't think there's a market for Cam. There's a market for a big guy that can move a little and throw if the coach is right.
I would like to see Jameis for a year. With
that's all I'm asking. One year.
I don't know what to expect.
Not paying him a ton.
I can see him for 1 year. I don't think Taysom Hill is a franchise quarterback.
But I think he's valuable.
Yes, he is valuable. But I don't think he's a feature of the New Orleans Saints. But the reason that I picked the Saints this year to make it to the Super Bowl has a lot to do with the fact that I think this is Drew Brees' last year. Yeah. They pushed everything into him. I think he's going to play with that, as he's already said, he plays that way anyway. It really feels like that this year. And, I mean, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm not even going to go down the CBS receipt of records that he has around the league. But their next three games, the 49ers,
win.
The Falcons,
win.
And then at the Broncos. And they are already atop the NFC South.
Yeah, they're going to win their division. Host playoff games.
Yeah. So one of the biggest questions entering the season was whether or not Tua would be able to overcome the season-ending hip injury at Alabama. Dolphins obviously took a chance on him and drafted him fifth overall. And OC Chan Gailey said he sees the same impressive quarterback that he saw in college.
It looks like it to me. I can't see a real difference. You know, physically is the one thing that you had the concern about. And I think he kind of relieved all our thoughts about that the other night.
I never once thought about his hip in his first two starts. So I didn't even think about it. I'm just, until he said that, I forgot all about his hip.
Well, because he was obviously healthy or they wouldn't have put him out there.
Right.
We have incredible doctors and incredible medical personnel on these teams now and in college. So yeah, they got right on top of it. If you're dedicated to your rehab, which obviously Tua is, you're going to come back 100%. It's a lot of these injuries, you're physically going to heal from them. It's the mental aspect of coming back from an injury that devastating that is really the hardest to do. Anyone out there who's ever had surgery, that's the biggest thing, especially for a professional athlete, is trusting that particular body part again, because you've just gone through the trauma of the surgery and the disappointment of losing the season and obviously the fear of where you're going to get drafted and then the pain of rehab. Like, it's all exhausting, even though it is your job to rehab and come back. Yeah. So the trusting factor sometimes is bigger than the actual recovery and physically.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Cowboys got a gift. Are they willing to take it? That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
This is Dave Johnston.
This is Corey Anglesey.
This is John Schultz.
We're from Washington State, here stationed at Camp Lemonnier, Djibouti, Africa. Go Hawks!
What I love to see, love for the Seattle Seahawks. Chris Spielman, 10 years in the NFL. He's still the Lions' all-time leading tackler, which is remarkable because he only played 8 years. Half his career, he was a Pro Bowler, Fox NFL analyst. He is joining us now live. It's interesting. You have the Giants-Eagles this weekend, and I was joking with you. The Giants are the greatest 2-7 team ever. I've watched them. I've watched an entire Giants game 5 times this year. They've won 2 of them, and they should have won the other 3. And you're watching them on tape, and I've said this before. They remind me of the Dolphins a year ago. I know they're well coached. They just need 2 to 3 perimeter athletes. They don't get any cheap touchdowns. But you're breaking them on film this week. Are they capable of winning 5 games the rest of the way and winning the division?
I think they absolutely are. Remember, this Philadelphia team beat them, and the Giants were up 21-10. With 6 minutes to go, and they let Philadelphia back in it. And so part of it, too, is when you lose a lot, I think you got to get over that hump, Colin, whatever that hump is. And once you start winning close games and you start believing, and it's clear that these guys believe in what Joe Judge is telling them, and they're playing better. And it's interesting that you say they're the best 2 in whatever team they are that you've watched. I actually had a conversation with my brother with the Vikings, and he asked me who I was doing this week. And I said, I'm doing the Giants and the Eagles. And he said, what do you think of the Giants? I said, man, they're pretty good. I don't understand why they can't get over the top, but we'll see. Once you have some success, sometimes that can carry over.
Yeah. You know, and let's talk Eagles. I like Carson Wentz, but I do think he's reckless. And I think that's fair. I like Sam Darnold. He's reckless. When you watch Wentz, I kind of break it down to this. Last 12 games, he's won or tied 8 of them. I like him. When you watch your film and you break down a game before you get to it, what do you like about Wentz? What drives you crazy?
First of all, I think he is really a great competitor and a guy that can make every difficult throw, and he plays without fear. Now, that's an advantage, and that's also a detriment. When you're talking about a guy that has more turnovers than 30 NFL teams himself, that's a problem. And Carson recognizes it's a problem. He's been saying that it's a problem. But the problem is he's not doing anything to rectify the problem. So what I look for them to start doing, I think when they're most efficient, is when they no huddle, they go a little bit of up-tempo.
Yeah.
And they try to get the ball out of his hands. I mean, he tries to make every single play a spectacular play, and you're not going to last in this league by doing that because defenses are too good. And I get having confidence in your arm, but you're not that good. And sometimes it's okay to realize that you're not that good and protect the football or eat a play or avoid negative plays. And plus, the other thing that would help Carson is they're ranked 31st on first down yardage. And so they're always playing behind a stick, so he's always in position trying to make up yards by making a spectacular play.
That's a really great point. Chris Spielman, Fox Sports NFL analyst, 10 years in the NFL, 8 in Detroit and 2 in Buffalo. So when the you know, Joy and I both have this sort of let's wait and see on Antonio Brown to the Bucs, and I said, you know, one guy can disrupt a locker room. Like, go back to your 10 years in the NFL. Sometimes a really strong personality, Chris, it by the way, it can elevate It can disintegrate. Right. I mean, go back to your career. Was there ever a personality that either elevated or hurt a locker room?
I think we had strong leadership, and I think that's what the Bucks are counting on. Here's my question is, why bring him in? I mean, you have Scotty Miller down there, the kid from Bowling Green, catching touchdowns all over the place. You can get Mike Evans involved. You got Godwin down there, who's as good of a receiver, a top 10 receiver, in my opinion, in the league. Why do you have to bring him in? I'm all for the comeback story. I love it when guys are able to come back, and I'm rooting for Antonio Brown. But if I were Bruce Arians or Jason Light, there's no way I'd bring him in. I have something good going. I don't need to add to it. And that's the thing that kind of frustrated me a little bit, because I don't think you needed him. Everything was kind of clicking, and then now it's not. And then you're taking catches away from Godwin, you're taking catches away from Evans, and you're taking catches away from Gronk and Scotty Miller. I don't know why they did that, to be honest with you. Chris, I really don't.
Yeah, Chris Spielman, Giants, Eagles this weekend. You know, Jamal Adams is one of the best safeties in the league, and I've always loved Carlos Dunlap's athleticism, his length. Seattle brings him back last weekend, and their defense is worse.
Yeah.
How long does it take? Take me into the mind of a guy who was an elite defensive player. Are we asking too much for Carlos Dunlap to matter this year, or Jamal Adams? They just haven't been around enough.
Well, I it does take time to get back in. I came back off a shoulder injury in the 90s, and maybe about a game or two to kind of get that for your body to catch up with your mind and to catch up with the game speed. I think Jamal Adams will be fine, and Carlos Dunlap is a nice pickup anytime you can get an edge rusher. Look, Carlos Dunlap's going to be strictly a role player and be a third down pressure guy and a substitution situational guy, which is fine. But, you know, those guys aren't the issue. The issue is the total defense. They can't stop anybody. And so instead of looking at one or two guys, I think you look at the team and figure out, okay, Ken Norton Jr. has to look at it and say, what can I do better? Can I make it simpler? Can I get more aggressive? Can I get less aggressive? Whatever adjustments need to be made, Seattle is not good enough right now, in my opinion, on the defensive side of the ball to get where they want to get. Now, when you talk about Russell Wilson, I just think when I look at Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes, it's whoever I think of last is who I like better. He's just phenomenal in what he's been able to do, man. He's just you take Russell Wilson off that team, do you think they're a 500 football team?
Oh, God, no. Oh, no.
I guess that's a yes for you, Ben. Yeah.
Well, I think you could take Mahomes off Kansas City and they could win games.
Correct.
Yes. I don't think this team – I think this team's a four-win team without Russell Wilson. I'm dead serious.
He's unbelievable. He is unbelievable what he's able to do. And that's the joy of watching the league and the excitement that I have of watching a guy like Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes or Kyler Murray, who I've done a couple games of this year, and of course Tua, who I thought played really, really well in Arizona. And a couple of those running plays that he made at the end to extend drives was just remarkable. And I'm rooting for that because I'm rooting for good football players, and I want to see these guys succeed because, you know, because I've heard you talk about it. I'm a fan of your show, and I listen to you all the time. And the league is made about stars, and the stars are the quarterbacks. And when the quarterbacks play good, that's healthy for everybody. Would you agree with that?
Oh, God, yeah. Tua and Kyler was the best football game I've seen this year. I'm
so
not kidding.
Good, wasn't it?
Oh, my
it's
God.
So good.
I could not turn it off. I just sat there for 4 hours. I'm like, this is Disneyland for a football fan.
All right, I got one for you. Let me see if you agree with me on this. When I watch Kyler Murray run, like I got to tell you, I don't say this very often, but there's a little bit. He's the closest thing to Barry Sanders that there is, as far as making guys look silly.
I don't
bursting past them. I hope that I'm not overstating that. I just think that what he's able to do with the football and avoid contact and shake guys, it's just remarkable to watch what type of athlete he is.
Oh no, it's as much as I like Russell Wilson, he doesn't make guys miss like that.
No,
he doesn't. He doesn't. I love your work, Chris. Chris Spielman, Fox Sports. Good seeing you, buddy.
All right, take care. Thank you.
Yeah, he played with Barry Sanders, obviously, in Detroit. Chris played with him. Chris told me the old story years ago. He goes, he's the only guy in tackling girls. And Chris was a great player. Chris is one of the top five college football players I've ever seen. They did tackling drills for the Lions. He'd go, you'd look at Barry Sanders, and if he was third guy to get the ball, you'd count 1, 2, 3, 4, and you'd move back in the line. It's like, I don't want to be embarrassed by that. Barry Sanders was the only guy, Chris, like, he would humiliate you. In a little box, the Oklahoma drill. You wouldn't get a hand on him.
everybody looked awful. It's like people were like in the NFL, guys were like, I got no interest in a tackling drill with Barry Sanders. They put the rookies up there. You guys go try to tackle him. Get cozy, Tommy John, right now, $25 off site-wide, Tommy John. TommyJohn.com/herd. Go to their site for details, all sorts of good stuff. 25%, $25 off site-wide. Peter King last hour in L.A., it's the Herd.